Dave answers your questions about personal finance. He provides insight into making the most on your money using over 20 years of experience. Money Matters is brought to you in part by Petso Financial Consultants and Mountain West Bank, Idaho's community bank, with offices in Boise, Ketchum, and Coeur d'Alene. Dave Petso, the host of Money Matters, is a certified financial planner professional and an investment advisor representative with Cambridge Investment Research Advisors Incorporated. Registered representative securities offered through Cambridge Investment Research Incorporated, a broker-dealer member FINRA SIPC. Investment advisor representative Cambridge Investment Research Advisors Incorporated, a registered investment advisor. Cambridge Investment Research Incorporated and Petso Financial Consultants are not affiliated companies. And now the host of Money Matters, Dave Petso.
Good morning and welcome. Thanks again for joining us. And of course, like every week, I'd really love to hear from you live at 580-5436, 580-KIDO, or live email is fine too. And that's Dave at PetsoFinancial.net. You know, I really, the truth is I came in today not sure what direction I wanted to run today. I didn't know. I feel pretty good today. It was just one of those things where, no real confusion this week. Had an interesting trip to Chicago, which I'll share some details of later. But it was... coming in, I was, we want to talk generally about the market, and it just kind of struck me that we have so much abundance in the world. So much. Yet people are unhappy, and I'm thinking about this. I'm wondering, why is it that, I tweeted this past week, another generation lost in investing because this generation isn't investing. I mean, okay, so we had a downturn in 2000. Well, that was bad, but it was really a downturn of tech stocks. It wasn't a downturn, it was a slight bear market, pretty mild in other sectors, but not a big deal. It certainly wasn't until 9/11 at all, except in tech. So if you invest inappropriately, you got crushed, but we don't invest inappropriately. It's the market did that to us. And then we get hit with the Great Recession, which, of course, is caused by tremendous amounts of leverage, people using their homes as an ATM, and investment bankers doing all kinds of stuff, politicians making Wall Street give loans to people that won't pay it back. Pretty much they promise they won't pay it back. They certainly have no capacity to pay it back, but you have to, gun to head, or we will shut you down. So there's plenty of blame to go around. But in that whole thing, the market tanks. This time broadly. Swearing off, it seems to me, an entire generation that they will never, ever make money again in the market. I know they say I never again will lose money in the market, but they never will again make money in the market in the single biggest wealth creator ever created. This whole generation sits out. And we can blame the Great Recession. But I think a lot of it has to do with this general amazing amount of abundance we have. And in a world that's changing so fast, we can't wrap our minds around it. Yes, everything's abundant. Everybody's rich. Everybody is rich. Well, not as rich as... Right. So we get back to the issue of contentment. But this isn't a sermon. This is not a Sunday. You can think about that some more later. It's an enormous problem, obviously, because we all are rich. But not as rich as somebody else. Not as famous as somebody else. And this creates, of course, enormous problems. But to me, we fundamentally have to stop and look at how much we have. It is truly amazing, all the things that we have. All the wealth. Healthcare. When it's not available. Okay. We haven't cured cancer yet. You're right. We haven't actually figured out how to travel at light speed yet. Yet. We walk around with a iPhone that's all of like 6 years old, that has far more technology. I can talk to it. I don't even have to type on it anymore. It's just, but it's stuff. And it just confuses us. See, so we have so much wealth, but we spend all of our time on these little devices that are miraculous at bringing information to our fingertips. I mean, unbelievable. Can you imagine, the head spinning that would go on from just a few centuries ago, the amount of information available to the average person for free? For free. Sorted by a thing called Google? Amazing. It's stunning. And when we think about all this, and I do, anyway, I think about all this, and I recognize how amazingly abundant my life is. How can we look at the world objectively and not be astounded at the opportunities there are? There's so much. There's so many different things you can do. You can design your own education. You can start your own business in multiple ways that didn't exist even 10 years ago. How about crowdfunding? Or crowd. Is it crowd or cloud? I don't know. I think it's cloud. Anyway. Business is starting up. Business is getting a hand up by people from their neighborhood, even people around on the other side of the world. The abundance is astounding. The life expectancy is exploding. We now can run the genetic code for your entire body in hours, not in months. It's amazing we can do it in the first place, but as fast as we can do it now. And with the exponential growth of technology, yes, it does fry your brain. But why it is that we stop and figure out all the time when we use this amazing amounts of information and spend all of our time figuring out that it's a blood moon year or it's a shih tzu year or something. I don't even want to say it because it sounds like that word. I've heard that, which is some kind of ancient Jewish year thing. But this is like a super shih tzu year or something. Really? Really? I just have no answer for this. I don't. I don't have any answer at all. How do you argue that? It's like arguing with somebody who says, this is the year because this sign over here and this one over here that I'm going to go stand on my house, even though the Bible tells me it's foolishness to do, because I'm proclaiming this is the end of the world. This is it, right now. Same thing. Quit living. Stop. Stop everything, because I've figured it out. I've used this magic technology that's allowing people to live abundant lives for decades, in many cases, longer than ever before, longer than they were supposed to be alive. Cure for cancer around the corner, Alzheimer's, who knows what else? Right around the corner. Amazing abundance. But I want to spend my time never looking, never spending a moment just in peaceful contemplation of the abundance. You know, when I think about my grandparents, and I do often actually, I really do, because they were amazing people. Absolutely amazing people. And what they gave and gave and gave and gave in their communities to the truly poor, which I was privileged enough when I was a young child to spend a good deal of each summer seeing this. Seeing them go out to the coal mine communities in West Virginia with a box of shoes. to pick up kids for Sunday school. It's what my grandpa did. Usually the pastor didn't show up at the settlement house my grandma ran, so she'd have to do the sermon. She rounded up people in the local community to come in. It wasn't a church. It was a settlement house, converted to a church every Sunday. That was real poverty. The real deal thing. Kids didn't have shoes to wear to church. This is in my life. And I see this, and I see these amazing people that did this, and we contrast this, and of course, they did this with great joy. Of course they did. That's what people like that do. But with today's amazing abundance, where a cell phone apparently is an American right, along with cable TV, and not having to work if you don't choose to work. I get that everything is confusing. I get that the politics get in the way. But the reality is this. We have amazing stuff available to all of us. We have an amazing ability, if we want, to start businesses, to change our own little world, like no generation ever could even dream of. But we walk around with a woe is me attitude, and it's all going to end. We're all going to die soon. And we look for, and we go to the internet looking for nonsense. Nonsense. Financial pornography. Let me see if I can find it. I assume you just type in financial pornography, and up comes the Shih Tzu Moon thing. And up comes this guy who's called for the end of the world 17 times. He's got an excuse for each one why it's not, but the next one's coming. It's real. And all you have to do is subscribe to this thing, and we'll help you get around it. And of course, we've got the guys that proclaim that you can have stock market returns with no risk. I mean, as long as they're not licensed, as long as you just have an insurance license. The state of Idaho says, we don't even bother with people like that. That's okay. They can say whatever they want to say, according to the state of Idaho, because they don't ever enforce them telling the truth. So I assume it must be like expressed somewhere. If you have an insurance license, you say what you want. I suppose that's what you do when you type in financial pornography. And it's just this whole constant battle, I think, with so much information out there. But it's not information. It's just this flow of data. How do we sort that? How do we bring that to have meaning? But if we're always looking for why it's all bad, why we're all going to die, and it's just not going to work out, and the Fed's stupid, and the Congress is stupid, and the justices are stupid, and everybody's stupid, and it's not going to work. We assume somehow that the Federal Reserve isn't as smart as the people in the coffee shop or the people in the financial pornography blog. They're so smart. They've got it all figured out. They've never been right, but they got it all figured out, and they sound really smart. I'm not saying there aren't problems. Of course there are. Obviously, the deep, unbelievable evil that ISIS is mind-numbing in a world like today, right? Where there's great abundance, but it's, again, to me, is kind of almost a symptom of that, right? It's a symptom of, we have all this abundance, so I'm going to hate the world, and that's what I am. That's who I am. And it's a weird thing, but I do think, to a degree, we all have to fight this. Not because we're evil, but because there is this huge amount of data vying for your attention. And the louder we scream, the more scared we can make you, the more we can make up. I mean, we can exaggerate as much as we want. You know, stock market returns with no risk. You're like, wow, did you hear that? Oh, no, all I heard was guarantee, and I'm scared, and so I want to go to guarantee, and I heard I get it all. Does that sound normal? Well, no, it sounds crazy, but all I hear is guarantee. All I hear is, all you need to know is I'm scared. And we are, and the world's changing, it's fast. But if we kind of come back to this amazing abundance that there is, that is the reality of the world today, people travel. Now, you can go, you know, across the United States in less than half of a day. I know they might lose your bag. I know it's a little uncomfortable because the guy next to you weighs 300 pounds. I know that they just won't give you free food anymore. No, it's not that hard, but we've become so spoiled, so accustomed to it, right, that the idea of being able to travel so far in a matter of hours, all we do is sit around and whine, right? Oh, I got to take off my shoes because they're going through security. I mean, all those things that are, it's just not what it used to be. You're right, it isn't. It's a lot less expensive and more available to everybody. Abundance. Available to the average person to go a long, long ways in hours. Amazing. And yet, you hear all the time, it's not as good as it used to be. This isn't as good as it used to be. Why? I just think it's this. We're comfortable with what we're used to. And the world is changing so fast. Technology is exponential. It's not linear. So we take one more step, and everything doubles. I can't wrap my mind around that either. Right? 30 linear steps, right, is, you know, 30 feet, 30 yards, whatever. 30 exponential is beyond the sun. It's inconceivable. We can't wrap our mind around it. And so maybe we cling to, but when we cling to what's comfortable, when we cling to what we know, and we assume everything else is somehow bad, I think we miss much. We don't just miss the blessings of life. We miss investment opportunities. We don't invest. We don't expand businesses. We won't invest because we're convinced that somebody writing a blog somewhere is more right than the people who have managed money successfully for decades. Because that's what we want to believe. It's easier, somehow. So if we think abundantly, just and I think more clearly about the world and think abundantly about it, I think we understand what we're going through more than when we look at it only with jaded eyes. This just can't go right. Yeah, actually, it can, and usually does. In almost all things. Yeah, I'm looking back and all the history of the markets and all that. And what people don't recognize, I think, sometimes, and I try to remind everybody of this, is that the historic recoveries, the things we went through, like gas lines, oil embargoes, right? Actually, at the time, it was a big deal. A president being impeached, Soviet Union encouraging communism all over the world. It is a huge concern, a huge problem. We spent trillions of dollars trying to stop that. In many lives, in many wars that divided our nation. We look back at those times and you just think, you know what people do most of the time? They talk wonderfully, like the 70s were some kind of awesome period of time. High inflation, Jimmy Carter. Really? You know, I kind of grew up in the 70s and I was fine. It's fine. It was fine. But I'll tell you what, when I got out of high school and I started looking for a job in 1980 in Boise, Idaho, are you kidding me? This was really hard. to find work. It's all right. We're just getting started. And that's what people did. But to look at times like that, when the interest rates were 21.5, prime lending rate went to 21.5. Starting businesses, getting jobs, having abundance of any kind, traveling across the United States for $1,000. You had $1,000. Crazy difficult. We look back and we look at, you know, those conditions and go, yeah, you know, I'd have invested, you know, when in the 73-4 bear market when prices got cut in half, I'd have been there, man. I mean, who wouldn't have want to buy, you know, Exxon, Chevron and all that, the high-quality corporations at that kind of a discount? Easy to look back. There is no emotion attached to history. No emotion at all. Only emotion today to today's unsolved problems. There's great emotion when we haven't solved them. And you can't put the same weighting, even though, obviously, these were more difficult times in the past than today. But people think today's the day. They're going to time the market, get out. So I do worry about this generation. What are they going to invest in? Are they really going to be like the people post-depression who avoided the greatest investment and great wealth? By staying out of stocks, will this generation ever come back with $12 trillion sitting in cash, earning zero? Actually, negative real returns. Our number is, do you think abundantly? I think it's hard. I do. Our number is 580-5436, 580-KIDO. It's dave@petzofinancial.net. We'll be right back.
This is Money Matters with Dave Petzo. Dave is taking calls right now. Call 580-543. This is Money Matters with Dave Petzo on 580 KIDO, Idaho's place to talk.
Hello, welcome, and thanks for joining us. Please do give us a call at 580-5436, 580-KIDO. Would love to hear from you. And let's talk about what you want to talk about. That just happened to be on my mind, that's all. Doesn't mean you're completely different. And for those of you that have a more negative view, I'm happy to entertain that as well. Again, our number, 580-KIDO. If you prefer email, it's dave@petzofinancial.net. Hey, in the second hour, education segment, two things. I'm going to talk a little bit about reversion to the mean. Now, what does that mean? Okay, reversion to the mean. And the way the markets operate cyclically. So I will talk a little bit about that, quite a bit actually. And we'll see if we have other time as well. I want to talk about negative interest rates again, what that really means, and is that normal? Do we have we had that before? We'll talk a little bit about that because it, you know, we toss these terms around like everybody gets it. What do negative interest rates mean, and why and who are buying those bonds if they are negative? So we'll talk about that in our education segment in the second hour. This week, we have three, multiple records, okay? But two main ones, okay? The NASDAQ hits at record high again. Now, of course, great, being fair, and everybody's all poo-pooing it. You know, it's 14 years ago, or 15, I'm sorry, 2000s, that would be 15 years ago, Dave. 15 years ago, the NASDAQ, with the tech bubble, hit an all-time high. And stocks sold for hundreds or thousands or zero price-to-earnings ratios all over the NASDAQ. Well, that didn't end well. So I'm sure you're going to hear and see a lot of people talking about, see, here we are, what goes up must come down. This is just not true. It's really not true. It's true in a gravitational sense. But Did GE just kind of come up 100 plus years ago and then just go away? No. It kept growing. At periods, it pulled back, but it kept growing. Did Merck keep growing? Yeah, it didn't come down to the ground. It pulls back. Doesn't go to zero. And I think people truly misunderstand. You know, what goes up must come down. You know, here we are at all-time highs. Now we're going to pull back. Why? It's a number. It was a number that was hit 15 years ago when P.E. ratios were hundreds or thousands of times. when the index was virtually 100% tech. It's still big tech, but they're not selling for hundreds of times. It's not infinity times earnings in the NASDAQ at this price level. It's not comparable. The world is not the same. It's just a number. When the Dow hits 30,000, you say, 30,000, yeah, it will. It'll hit 50,000. It'll hit 100,000. That's the trajectory of the market. It's up. I don't know when. I don't know if I'll see it. But the trajectory is always higher, and so it's not. And then also, global stocks hit all-time highs. Global, the overall global stocks hit all-time highs this week as well. And, of course, the S&P, you know, nudged in there for an all-time high. I mean, it's barely up for the year, by the way. The U.S. markets are barely up for the year. Is this possibly the mirror of last year? It happens all the time. We'll talk about that after Fox News. And hopefully we'll talk to you. It's 580-5436, 580-KIDO. It's Dave at PetzoFinancial.net. Please do ring us up, and we'll be right back.
This is Money Matters with Dave Petzo. Dave is taking calls right now. Call 580-5436, Idaho's place to talk. With Dave Petzo on 580-KIDO, Idaho's place to talk.
Hello, welcome, and thanks for joining us. 580-5436 is our number, 580-KIDO. Please do call us, seriously. Love to hear from you. Love to engage with you. Now, when I mentioned right before we left that last segment, is this a mirror of last year, right? And I'm going to talk a little bit about this in the second hour as we talk about reversion to the mean, okay? But basically, so far, and again, this is, I hate these short periods of time, right? You know, 3 months or 4 months, and then last 3 weeks, XYZ has happened, or even the last 1 year, this is what happened. But it is interesting to note that at how loud the calls were in the fourth quarter, just last year, I mean, just a few months ago, right? That you had to just go ahead and stay in the U.S. You have to just buy the S&P 500. That's all you can do. You should not. I mean, emerging markets, it's a disaster there. Look what's happening in, you know, and then they'll pick on a country, right, like Brazil. They won't mention that India is on fire, right? Doing great. I understand. Making a case is what you are doing, is making a case. But it's not balanced if you're just making a case. And so, as we look at the mirror of last year where we saw emerging markets terrible, down a lot, they're up this year, more than the S&P. But most unexpectedly, I think, is that Europe and other developed markets around the world, not U.S., have vastly outperformed the U.S. Vastly. Since almost all the catcalls of you can only own the S&P, which is all U.S., gigantic. It's really about the S&P 70 stocks, as we've talked many times. It's the giant giants. And it's fine. These are great corporations. They are great corporations. But isn't it interesting? And avoid the little small caps. Small caps didn't do well last year. Boom. Suddenly they're on fire. It is interesting how things swing back and forth. And so far this year, it is interesting. It's been like this interesting little mirror of last year. It's just almost opposite all the way down the line, which is really quite interesting. Usually it just doesn't happen that quickly to have people, you know, yelling and screaming about the top of the market. How you have to be only in, like, tech stocks in 2000. How you only want to be in the S&P 500, right? It doesn't usually happen quite that quickly. Not quite. Hey, Michael, I want to do justice here, and I need to get back on track, so I will take your call on the other side of this break. And our number is 580-5436, 580-KIDO. We'll be right back.
This is Money Matters with Dave Pezzo. Dave is taking calls right now. Call 580-5436, Idaho's place to talk. Yo, Idaho's place to talk.
Hello, welcome, and again, thank you so much for joining us, and we'd love to hear from you at 580-5436, 580-KIDO, or Dave at PetsoFinancial.net. And let's go to Michael in Boise. Michael, thanks for holding. Go ahead, please.
Thanks, Dave. Thanks for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
I think I'm one of those people, I just enjoy listening to you talk. You you know so much about the market. I was one of those people that was 100% invested when the market, you know, crashed in 2008.
Right.
And so I can relate to that. I'm not 100% invested now, you know, probably due to my age, but I am invested.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the Fed's pretty much signaled, you know, you can't, I've learned you can't fight the Fed no matter what kind of program they have. And with the zero interest policy, and even if they raise it, they're not going to raise it very much. I don't believe they could get past 2% the Fed funds rate at the highest.
Mm-hmm.
I would be shocked. And I don't think I think the market might, you know, it gyrates. I think the market might react a little bit at first, but I really don't think that a small amount is going to, you know, if you get up to 5 or 6%, that might be something to talk about, but I don't, you know, there's no way that's going to happen.
Not anytime soon, I would agree with you.
You know, it's basically, it's the only game in town with interest. I mean, you can't get anything out of a bank, and
no.
And you can't even basically keep up with inflation. So, you know, so many people I talk to, it's like, well, you know, it's like they think they have to invest. It's all or none.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like you don't have to invest everything. Just invest a portion of your portfolio. And I just wanted to kind of put that out there on the table. And then I also thought it was kind of interesting that the NASDAQ is now, after 15 years, it's finally, you know, eclipsed its high. And as you mentioned in your comments, you know, back in 2000, it was, you know, companies had no earnings or ridiculous numbers, 150 times PE. You know, now it's
150. That had been a low PE. Seriously, I mean, you know, like great companies like Yahoo were still selling at 2,000 times earnings. Right? You know, crazy stuff.
Just incredible. But it's totally different now. Companies do have earnings, and the PE ratios are way down. So, yeah, I just continue to see, like you say. I mean, there's going to be bear markets and bull markets in between, but I think the trajectory is going to be from left to right. It's going to be increasing.
Yeah, it always has.
And yeah, it always has. So,
yeah.
I mean, if we have a nuclear war or something, maybe that might throw a curve, you know. But
yeah,
I think we'd have greater things to worry about. But I'll just let you go ahead, and I'll just listen off air. And hey, where's that Jim? He hasn't called in the last few weeks.
No, I know. He's just not doing his job,
He's
is he?
He's not doing his job. I just want to thank you for a wonderful show, Dave, and I just really appreciate everything you do for us.
Michael, I appreciate you. Thank you very much. I really appreciate that. Thanks for the encouragement.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. And our number is 580-5436, 580-KIDO. You know, Michael brought up a couple of really good points I want to just touch on and reiterate here before we take a break. You know, one of the things that the market does do, it just kind of keeps going. And I know we think of that chart, you know, from the left and to the right, and sometimes you just have to, you know, just imagine that. Close your eyes. And I know everybody who talks about investing wants that chart, you know? And where on that chart was a bad idea to enter? Never. There never is a when we think of the big chart. You know, and I have one. We have two of them on the wall. And hey, Seb, thanks so much for digging that out and giving that to us. It was really nice. Sebastian was a teacher here in town for lots and lots of years and a frequent listener, so hopefully he's listening. But anyway, brought those in, and it was just very kind. He used to teach in his high school classes like some economics and showed those charts and found them. And so we put them up, and, you know, it's the old market charts from way back. And, of course, it runs from low on the left to high on the right, because long periods of time, that's what always happens. Always. I know we don't believe that, but it always does. And when you look at it and you say, where on there should I have bought? It's anywhere. Always. Always and anywhere. When should you invest? Whenever you have money to invest. Whenever you can put it away long term. Long term. Well, I don't have long term, you know, my age. I'm going to talk about that a little bit coming up. But you don't? I mean, are you going to be dead in 10 years, 5 years? Will there be any inflation? So you want to earn zero. You want to have your money shrink every year. Okay. I mean, that's your personal choice. You can choose to do that. I choose not to. When the great corporations of the world pay still, like 3% dividends on some great corporations. Some are more. I know they are. I know you're out there thinking, well, screaming, yelling, well, what about my Verizon? What about this and that? I know. Some pay more. Got it. I'm talking about some that grow their dividends. Like it's almost a religion for them. Well, we've been doing it for 57 years in a row. Now I think we better just make sure we keep growing it every year. And they do. Somehow. Even when, you know, Jimmy Carter's in office, even when there's embargoes, right? Even when the market gets cut in half in 2007, they raise the dividends. Now, nutty, nutty things. But it is amazing. And we miss that. Because we live in the squiggle. We live in that little squiggle now where we have predetermined that what I want to do is I want to be plugged in, wired in, and I want to go to the financial pornography blogs. I want to figure out what's wrong. I want to figure out what's wrong in the world. I want to figure out why the Fed's stupid. I want to figure out why they're trying to destroy us, why Obama's really a secret Muslim communist agent, and he's trying to destroy the country. That's what I want to figure out. And he's thrown away the entire Constitution, and he's going to, yes, he has. Lots of that's true. I get that. We're still here. Because one man is not big enough to destroy individual businesses operating the invisible hand all over the world. Can't stop it. Can't stop it. Even being stupid, you can't stop it. That's what we miss when we just hunker down and figure out all the time what's wrong. Then it's awful hard to come into the chart that we all want. We all want the big chart. This is what my life of investing should look like. Sometimes we literally have to ignore the squiggle. Our number is 580-5436, 580-KIDO. Do give us a call. We'll be right back.
This is Money Matters with Dave Petzo. Dave is taking calls right now. Call 580-5436, Idaho's place to talk. Is Money Matters with Dave Petzo on 580-KIDO, Idaho's place to talk.
Hello, welcome, and thanks for joining us. 580-5436 is our number, and if you prefer email, it's dave@petzofinancial.net. Speaking of which, email. Dave, I know you've probably covered it in the past, but can you speak a little bit about the differences between 401k and 401k Roth and how to choose which one is best? Cassie, thank you very much. Good question. I wanted to take a few minutes to do that. The 401k is a deductible just like it always has been, right? It comes right off your paycheck. You have payroll taxes, but other than that, you don't have federal or state taxes. You literally don't pay taxes on the money until it comes back out of the 401k later in retirement, theoretically. Please don't ever withdraw. It is deadly. It's deadly, deadly, deadly. I'll come on. Maybe I'll just make a note here. You can't do that ever. There's never a good reason to take money out of a 401k prior to your retirement, ever. It's devastating. You're finished financially, truly finished. 401k Roth, okay? The Roth is a non-deductible. You don't get to deduct that off. You do pay taxes all the way through, not just payroll taxes, but the state and the federal taxes as well are withheld from your check. But when you reach retirement, the money grows and comes out tax-free. Tax-free, everything, earnings included, all tax-free, not just what you put in. Pretty big choice. What do you do? Do I take the deduction now? Do I take the deduction or not? No. Or do I take tax-free money later? Pay me now, pay me later. Fram commercial, right? So we have to decide. To me, it's a balance. And you do have to watch this. This is very important. And why I really wanted to spend a couple minutes on it. Thinking about diversification in a portfolio. Stocks, bonds, large cap, small, international, U.S., growth, value. All that stuff is how we tend to think of a portfolio. But we miss taxable and tax-free. We miss that. And it's very important that we have tax-free money and not just all of it is coming out. Because here's the bottom line. People often say, well, Dave, I've got, you know, $1 million in a 401k. That's great. So, you know, is this enough to live on? You know, first of all, you need to understand you don't have $1 million. You have about $700,000 because you haven't paid taxes yet. See, $1 million is $1 million only if you've paid taxes on it. No, you still have taxes on earnings, but you don't have it on the principal, and you do when it comes out of an IRA. And if you only have choices, so, you know, you have to buy a new car once in a while, you have a big expense, you have to remodel a house, whatever it is, big chunks come out, it can really jump your tax bracket. Something that costs $30,000 may cost $50,000 out of your IRA if you don't have non-qualified. So I think it's important to balance the two, very important. They have a balance between both. So if you're putting money in a 401k and you're very high tax bracket, no problem. Max that out. But we've got to do some other savings on the side. And if you have really high income, you probably don't qualify for a Roth on your own. Nothing wrong with putting some of that money, even if it's high tax, in a Roth. But I'd prefer, if you're in a very high tax bracket now, maximize your 401k and then outside of your plan. That's the deductible part of the 401k. Outside of the plan, begin a very, very strong savings program. You need to build up assets on the outside as well. Okay? But if you're in a low tax bracket, 401k Roth is fantastic, and I would certainly be putting money away in that. We got to take a quick break here for Fox News at the top of the hour. I hope you'll stick around in the second hour. We're going to talk about reversion to the mean as well as paying off your mortgage early.
Bish's RV presents the Insane Inflatable 5K, May 2nd at Expo Idaho. It's the newest fun run sweeping the nation. Climb up 6 stories to the top of Vertigo and then fly back down on a huge 4-lane slide. Best of all, the Insane Inflatable 5K benefits St. Luke's Children's Hospital. And Stinker has an insane offer. Fill up with Stinker Dino Care top-tier fuel at any Sinclair Stinker store and get 10% off your registration. Get details and get registered at InsaneInflatable5K.com.
I started my adventure in the Air Force Reserve as a payload system operator.
Flight medic in the Air Force Reserve.
I'm a pilot for the Air Force Thunderbird demonstration.
We do a lot in a little bit of time, and we have to do it very efficiently.
It's a very exciting career.
The Reserve gave me the opportunity to learn something totally different from what I did.
The training in the Air Force Reserve is second to none.
The most exciting thing in the Air Force Reserve is to be able to travel.
It gave me the opportunity to go to college. That was definitely a bonus.
And the Air Force Reserve gave me all those opportunities, and then even more.
Number two of Money Matters, and my name is Dave Pezzo, and these are my opinions and my opinions only, not the station. It's not the broker-dealer's opinions. And we're not going to tell you what to buy and sell. It's just, that's silliness. I mean, that's more financial pornography, frankly. It really is. It doesn't lead us closer to the truth to be sitting around and pondering what the market's going to do day to day, minute by minute. Because the squiggly line is crossing another squiggly line. You know, the 3-minute and the 4-minute and the Bollinger Band has been, violated. I don't know what violated the Bollinger Band could do. I don't know if you go to prison for violating the Bollinger Band, but it sounds bad. and I don't want to violate it. But we're not going to talk about it because it seems absolutely absurd to me. The great investors of all time have said they can't time the market. I mean, simple, easy. None of them. The Market Timing Hall of Fame has nobody in it. We read all the great wisdom, all the great information, true wisdom from great investors, John Templeton, Michael Price, Peter Lynch, Warren Buffett, Guy Ben Graham, man, I mean, just volumes and volumes of wisdom. But what do you think the market's going to do? What do you think the market's going to do? What do you think is going to happen to this and that and that? And we go on and we go to the blogs, the TV, and we search also for like, you know, radio programs. It'll say, how can I have market returns and no risk? I don't understand the world. I need guarantees, and so I'm willing to do things I know can't be true because I'm scared. I get that, but it doesn't lead us further. Closer to the truth, to ponder the buy-buy-buys and sell-sell-sells. What's driving the market today? Is it oil prices? Is it what's going on in Greece? It's all breathless. It's like, I can't believe, you know, we got to go to the exchange. We're going to talk about the 2-year bond and the 5-year. And can you believe we're at 0.12? I mean, this has gone straight through resistance at 0.11. Really? Really? This is what is called financial information. This is what we do, day in and day out.
And what do you see in the options trading thing going on here? Let's go to the fast money crew, and let's talk about the fastest possible money we could possibly have. We don't want to talk about real wealth or building up real wealth. We want to talk about fast money and trading.
I mean, this is what is further from the truth, not closer. And so we don't want to do that. We want to try to narrow things down and learn. And if we can, help each other. Sit on our hands more, relax more, be investors like the greats. How do we do that in a world that's so noisy and pushy? When it all seems so obvious what we would have, could have, should have done, because it reported 10 ways to Sunday, how in the world did we possibly miss? Yeah, my advisor missed the latest, you know, 10% move down. It was obvious it was going to happen. Obvious. You know, what kind of a, you know, stop loss limit thing do you have going on? You know, so like prices drop a little bit. All these things that we search for don't work. They don't work. Short term doesn't work. It doesn't. And you know, stop losses of, you know, 10 or 20%, fine, whatever. And then it comes back, you get out making your losses. Some of it's so illogical. So we don't want to play that chase game. We want to try to learn and grow together. So let's talk about reversion to the mean. What does that mean? Well, it's an incredibly important principle in investing. It really is a huge driver to making long-term investment decisions. It's not easy to define, but it sure is easy to know. Okay? It is easy to understand. Reversion to the mean, meaning, think about this. Like, I've talked about the gravitational pull towards 10%, right? It's like the gravitational pull to the equator is a rule of 10 in the stock market, right? It's been like 10% returns for your entire life, whether you're 43, 57, 72, 39, it's 10. Okay? It's bizarre, but there's this pull towards 10. But an important thing to understand as we measure the S&P 500 from 1926. Okay? From 1926, we know that the market's averaged 10. How, if we take these ranges, though, of like 8% to 12, that's a big range, 10 right in the middle. Okay, I'll give you 2 points on either side. How often do you think the market in those 90 years has been between 8 and 12%. Now, most would say a lot. I mean, that's got to be a lot. That's a big range right around the norm. Six. It's been six times. So what is the norm for the market? Well, it's way more or less than the average. This doesn't work in our human brain very well. But it's way more, it's way less. When we're running hot and things are good, particularly in an area of investment, a sector, what do you think happens with money flows? Do people run away for saying, oh, man, this has been up so much. I think we probably ought to take some profits here and move it to the stuff that isn't moving very much. Well, that's really easy in the abstract just to sit around, you know, like a bunch of college professors that have never actually worked in the world to tell us how we ought to do the world and invest and all that and sit around in our smoking jackets and contemplate life. Oh, yes, we have to be shifting from the poor performing things into the or shifting more money into the poor performing things. Of course, I like to buy low and sell high. It's how I do it. Yes, of course you do. Money flows show us that we don't do that at all. At all. At all. So reversion to the mean is what the market's doing. Right? So we run through these hot periods, and the market's maybe averaging, you know, 15, 20% even at times for a period, right? And then we go through a bear market and reversion back. And so there we are back on our 10. Reversion to the mean is very important. So you think about that. What sectors are hot? What sectors are cold? Now, here's the best part, right? When you think about reversion to the mean, I want to find sectors that people hate. There's nothing good you can say about them. Nothing. Nothing. Yeah. Oh, yeah, emerging markets, right, with rising interest rates, toast. They're dead. They're dead. They're dead. They're dead. Yeah, and so many of them are like commodities-based. I read this thing like Brazil. Corruption and commodities are all in a spiral. They're dead. Dead, dead, dead. Okay. What about India? I don't know anything about India. Who cares? I'm just talking about Brazil. All dead. Everybody hates it. Money's coming out. Can't say anything nice about it. But are we going to revert to the mean? When sectors are hot, they cool down. Sectors that are cold warm up. It's the nature of the world. It's a cyclical world we live in. And what is good today won't be tomorrow. And what's really bad will be good for your portfolio. The key and the difficulty always, of course, is timing? Nah, not really. No, because you can't get it right. It's just a foregone conclusion. When you invest will not be the bottom. That's just the way it is. Yeah, once in a while, you know, it's kind of like walking by a roulette wheel. You'll think of a number and it'll come up. You might hit the bottom once in a while. I think I would circle that date on the calendar and remember how rare that is. Super rare. The key and the hardest part is this. You're going to buy, it'll go lower. You're going to sell, and it's going to go higher. The key is you don't care. It is the way it is. And I'm going to be patient. I know. You think you're patient. Right. Righto. 78% of the drivers think they're better than average. I'm not a math professor or anything, but I just don't think that math works. We all have bias that we're better than we are at everything. At everything. It's astounding. It really is. Boy, do we have a hard time seeing the plank in our own eye. We really do. I'm not saying I don't. We all do. It's, wow, do we have our own blind spots. I had a friend point out the other day a really big blind spot of mine. Really. I appreciated it because it was like, wow, you know, I think I've heard that before. And I really didn't think about it and notice it. Now I'm trying to think about it, right? I mean, we all have these blind spots. We really do. We think we're patient. No, you're not. You go driving around town, and cussing here, cussing there, waving at people in the special only one-finger way. When we're ripping around in our cars, we're not patient. We're not patient with people. We're not patient in anything. We're certainly not patient with investments. All the statistics show that. All of them. It's rare to find people that say, yeah, I just want to build a portfolio for the decades. We've been talking about that so much lately, right? In our back to basics that we've been talking about. The benign neglect, right? People don't do that. So when we talk about return to the mean, it's a critically, it's like a fundamental buy low, sell high philosophy that is much more difficult to do than you think it is, because you're not doing that. You're not. Don't kid yourself. We know where you're putting money collectively. There's very few of you, very few people that had limited amounts of tech stocks in 2000. Very few. Very few people had limited amounts of real estate or real estate securities in 2006. And we all know about 08. And how everybody was positioned perfectly right for that. Buying 30-year zero coupon U.S. government bonds. Sure you were. And where were you in March of 09? When all the news was terrible and getting worse. But the market bottomed. Corporate bonds, called high yield, quotes, junk bonds, were up 50% in 2009. 50% on bonds. That's how much they went down before. Were you there? Reversion to the mean. See, when things get down and extended so low and go down so much, look what happens. It's like you're just tightening the screw, tighten, 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 tighten. And if it's even worse and you're just like, how can I hang on here at the bottom? I can't believe anybody buy it down here. It just really looks bad. It's tightening more. So when that is snapped, it's like a catapult. It takes off. It just takes off. Reversion to the mean. You know, it's just not, the game's not over till it's over. And the world ends. That's it. And I think we got bigger problems, like Michael said in the last hour. Bigger fish to fry if we have a nuclear war than worrying about the market. You can't manage around that stuff. You can't. So we talk about reversion to the mean. When sectors are hot, careful. Careful or you will get burned. They're easier. Everybody's in love with them. They're talking about it. It's in the press. When things are in the press and they're good and they're happy and it's all good, it's high priced. May go higher, but it is high by definition. You're not getting bargains. Period. Period. When people hate stuff, prices may go down. There may be good reasons to hate, like stocks in 2009. Who's going to like them? The economy's getting worse. Unemployment's going up every month. Jobs are being lost. All we're talking about is raising taxes on an economy that is already sputtering. Sputtering, it's cycling down. Who would want to own stocks? That's reversion to the mean. And that's why it's so critically important. Think about in different sectors that you're in love with or you hate. Are you investing in what you hate? Are you pulling back from what you love? If not, think about it. Have you gotten overdone in what's smoking hot? And is it time maybe to rebalance? That's why reversion to the mean is so critically important to think about, and why rebalancing, you know, once a year or whatever, is a healthy process to do. Our number is 580-5436, 580-KIDO. It's Dave at PetsoFinancial.net. We would love to hear from you. Come on, let's ring up those phones. We'll be right back.
This is Money Matters with Dave Petso. Dave is taking calls right now. Call 580-5436, Idaho's place to talk. On 580-KIDO, Idaho's place to talk.
Hello, welcome, and again, thank you for joining us. Hey, come on, seriously, we've had such a dearth of phone calls here. One all day, that's just not enough. 580-5436 is our number, 580-KIDO. We need you to participate in the program. Absolutely, absolutely. Hey, I mentioned I went to Chicago this past week and to look at an investment in a building, and, you know, it is... There are some things that I just that absolutely floor you. Even in the United States, and Boise is not exactly, you know, Hickville, okay? But I got to tell you something. It is just really amazing that this building I looked at pays $12 per square foot property taxes. Now, listen, I own a building. It's a little building. It's nothing fancy. In downtown Boise. And they lease out half of that. I can't even imagine. I mean, basically, between taxes at that rate, it wouldn't even cover utilities for what's charged, even in downtown Boise. Class A office space, towers, downtown Boise. Was it 22 maybe a square foot if you're up fairly high? Incredible. $12 a square foot in taxes. And I've got an incredible, amazing union story I got to share with you. It's just, yeah, that or I'll talk about it Monday with Kevin, because this is amazing what the union's done in Chicago. Just, you cannot believe how out of control some groups get in protecting their what they consider to be their turf. Let's go to the phones, though, at 580-KIDO, 580-5436. George, thanks for calling. Go ahead, please.
Good morning, Dave. How's it going?
Good. Thank you, sir.
I'm not Jim, but I thought I'd use his line. He must be on vacation spending all the money he's made.
I know. He's a very patient stock investor, so therefore we all know with that he is a very wealthy man.
Yeah. Okay. We like his style. Well, listen, a couple of questions. First one, rebalancing.
Mm-hmm.
That implies that you have a standard that you're going to move to.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just wondering, how do you decide what that is? Because I keep hearing terms like overweight and underweight and things like that, which implies that that's something that maybe that's where you'd like to be, but you keep shifting it around because things are looking better in a certain sector or a certain stock or something.
I absolutely agree with overweighting and underweighting. I think you have a core, to me, the best asset allocation is to have a core thought process. You know, we want to have some small cap. We want to have large, of course, and we want to have international, emerging markets, you know, growth, value.
Mm-hmm.
But I also believe you lean towards value over growth, and that, and you overweight, particularly, in small cap value.
Mm-hmm.
It just because studies show that that's simply an area that outperforms and has historically.
Mm-hmm.
But there are times then when you get that vast outperformance that says, I need to overweight growth
mm-hmm.
because it's just not keeping up.
Mm-hmm.
Or I need to put more in small cap because it's not kept up. So there's lots of different reasons why that occasionally you look and you'd say in a world today, you'd say, I still want to overweight emerging markets because relative valuations. So instead of a normal, say, 10% position, maybe I want 12 or 15.
Mm-hmm.
And I definitely want a strong position in Europe. The weakening euro is just terrific for those corporations, and they still have higher dividends in the U.S., lower P.E. ratios. So even though they've made a huge run in the last 3 months, still I want to stay in that overweight position. Mm-hmm. And that's the way I would balance throughout the world. If I was thinking of it on bonds, I'd be clearly overweight in municipal bonds versus, say, 10-year U.S. government treasuries at 1.9.
Yeah. Well, how do you decide those percentages? Now, the 10% for small cap, that sounds reasonable. I would say at least at this time, a smaller amount in bonds, mm-hmm. but a larger amount in maybe growth equity or value equity or something.
Exactly. So let's break it down a little bit and just talk in those terms. As markets rise and we look at the world now, I think the asset allocation, the classic, say, 60-40 split between stocks and bonds.
Uh-huh.
And I've talked about this many times, George, but that's just toast. We have to throw that out.
Right.
We have to rethink the whole thing because bonds are just too low. And that doesn't mean I totally think that interest rates are going to stay low for a long time, a long, 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 long time. Because the world is awash in cash. It's awash in cash. Not just because they're printing money. It's also because people have been sitting on mountains of cash. And the fact is, as I talked about in the first segment, the abundance in the world is rich. It's become so rich that the Wall Street Journal has a great article on it just today, I think, about how since 2000, we have more than doubled the wealth of the world.
Oh, my.
That's insane. Okay. And we don't even talk about it, right? It's like, well, that isn't going to affect anything. It affects everything. Everything. So we have so much more money, so interest rates are probably going to stay lower. There's just not as many opportunities to put money in to things, including bonds. But anyway, all this taken says this. If we're going to throw that out, what does that look like? Well, I think we have to say we want to minimize certainly the bond piece, and maybe we're going to go and look within bonds and look within that sector. So let's call the 60-40 an 80-20 for sake of argument, okay?
Uh-huh. Okay.
But I'm going to look within that sector for some alternatives to straight-up bonds. Now, I'm also going to own municipal bonds where is applicable, meaning obviously not in an IRA, and not if I'm in a low tax bracket, okay?
Mm-hmm.
But where applicable, I want to own municipal bonds. Also, instead of fixed low interest, I want to go ahead and have variable rate bonds, meaning floating rate notes, for example, is a better way of holding those bonds. You're not going to make a killing, but at least I make something on that piece. Then from there, I'm going to be layering in stocks. I might be thinking something like, well, if I'm taking more risk because I'm going to own more stocks because I can't own that much in bonds that I know won't work, then let's kind of reduce the risk on the stock side. Let's have stocks all, you know, basically all of them or most all of them to be producing some income. So it's because my bond piece isn't, and so I don't have that. So maybe we lower risk by focusing more on value and dividend payers.
Mm-hmm.
And if we do that, I think we balance the portfolio. In other words, we pull the risk in from both sides and more towards the middle. Now, if we're thinking about the world on the stock side, I would say, again, I want to have a neutral weighting almost all over, except in my foreign piece, I want to have a little bit more foreign versus domestic. Why? Reversion to the mean, George, just what I was talking about.
Yeah.
You know, those sectors have not done well. If you simply look at those charts, those color charts, a lot of people call them Callahan charts because I think they're that's who started doing them. But it shows all the color boxes, you know, like large cap, small cap, international, you know, commodities, stuff like that.
Uh-huh.
Basically, if you walk around, other than commodities, because commodities just plain old never work. They don't over long periods of time. They just don't work.
Hmm.
So other than commodities, here's why. Technology just allows us to get more out of everything.
Right.
So we get more out of the ground. We refine it better. And we don't use as much of it as we used to in everything. So commodities is kind of that's why they seem to be in a spiral.
Okay.
At any rate, other than that, you look at that and you say, what has performed poorly over the last 3 to 5 years relative to everything else?
Mm-hmm.
And then you will magically find them at the top of the chart, not necessarily this year, but soon.
Yeah. Well, that kind of leads me to my second question. You mentioned drilling out of the ground, and that's oil.
Yep.
Cramer had David Demshire on here yesterday or the day before. I think it was Thursday. And he said that from what it looked like to him is that oil is coming back. And I was pretty heavily invested in the oil patch, and I just kept it. I didn't expect it to do what it did. But
right. Well, nobody did, except, of course, people will claim they did. But yeah.
Well, he says that he thinks there's going to be a V-shaped recovery. In other words, it just went down real steep. It's going to come back up real steep. So you got an opinion about that?
Yeah, I think he's wrong. But that's just an opinion. I have no idea how we could have a V-shaped recovery.
Mm-hmm.
Do I think in oil?
That's what
in oil. Yes, I just have no idea how we would have that. The world literally is awash in oil.
Yeah, he laid it out, and he was talking about the cutbacks and especially in shale oil and things like that. And the way he explained it, it's like where people are going to hold back the oil where the prices are low, and then when the prices start rising, then they'll start putting more on the market. And what the companies like Continental Resources and EOG and others have done is they just, the way they store the oil, they just leave it in there.
Yep.
But it's already been drilled. It's been fracked. It's ready to go. And so as soon as the need comes back, and he says that it's coming back, there is a demand.
Mm-hmm.
There's a growing demand for it. He says, then they're sitting there ready for it, and that's why it would go up. Like that's why he predicted the V-shaped recovery.
And I would, but see, I would argue that with all that supply ready to come on the market, that would cap the V-shape.
Uh-huh.
I'm not saying that we're going to stay at 40 or 50. I don't think we will, because the average cost is higher to go find new oil, which means they won't drill. They won't drill for new resources. So yes, this is totally self-fulfilling in the sense that if prices go low enough, and they have, then people stop drilling, period. And then you have a shortage eventually. But my point, or his point, to me, seems to argue that it can't go past a certain point because then they'll simply tap those resources again.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Yeah. He was kind of arguing for that they will they'll bring it gradually back online so that the oil would go back up. And he thinks that it's going to go back up. I can't remember what he said, whether it was like $70. I think it was 70. I don't know. But he thought that there's good possibility. It's already at, 57?
Yeah.
And it would that's 13 points to go.
Yeah.
So he thought that that was very possible. So anyway.
Well, George, I think that is more than very possible. I think that's probable to happen.
I agree.
Yes. I just don't think it's when you say V-shape, I thought we're going back over 100 like immediately. And I don't see that. That's what a V-shape. To me, it's a, what do you want to call it? I can't think of it. A square root. It's a square root type of recovery. Boom, and then back up, and then flattening out where we have that supply-demand that appears to be a little bit higher than the $60 range is where the world can make money and will drill for the abundant oil that there is.
Uh-huh. Well, it's a really important area, so that was why I invested in it in the first place.
It is. It's very important. And, again, because of the leverage that was in that sector, many companies are going to go bye-bye.
Probably so.
They are, but there'll be many, many companies picking up the pieces at discounts and moving forward. So, yeah, creative destruction is always with us.
It is. Well, thank you for your opinions, Dave.
George, thank you for your call. I appreciate it. You have a wonderful day.
Thank you, too.
Thanks. Bye-bye. Bye-bye. And our number is 580-KIDO, 580-5436. It's Dave at PetzoFinancial.net. We'll be right back after Fox News.
This is Money Matters with Dave Petzo. Dave is taking calls right now. Call 580-5436, Idaho's place to talk. Is Money Matters with Dave Petzo on 580 KIDO, Idaho's place to talk.
Hello, welcome, and thanks for joining us. 580-5436 is our number, 580-KIDO, and our board is empty, which is really kind of personally disappointing for me. So please give us a call. But I do have an email to go with, so let's talk about that. So, what are your thoughts on prepaying on a mortgage for someone 10 to 15 years from retirement? Except for the peace of mind of not being in debt, is there anything to be gained by prepaying a 3.5% 15-year loan? In my case, I have about $6,000 left before I reach the 403B maximum contributions. And so, at any rate, that is a very good question and comes up a lot. Now, the reason I want to talk about this, too, is because it sometimes gets confused with this idea that I don't think you should be debt-free. I don't think you should be debt-free when it comes to your mortgage. I do not. I don't care if you get there eventually, as long as you've nailed everything else out of the park. The retirement's fully funded. You've got some non-qualified assets on the side. You've got education funded, if that is an important thing for you to help your kids do. All of that's done. Then we can start thinking about the mortgage. But this idea that, especially for young people, and I consumer debt, forget about it, okay? Long before Ramsey was on talking about debt snowballs and things like that, and hats off to him. I mean that. This is not anything. We've been talking about not being in consumer debt, right? I mean, this goes back 25 years when the show first started. Consumer debt is the enemy of any kind of financial independence. It means you have no ability to say no. It means, oh, but I want something, and even if I can't afford it, I'm going to have it anyway. That's what that means. That's exactly what consumer debt means. I have absolutely no discipline, and I want what I want, and that's it. So obviously, you're never going to have any financial freedom in that. So debt on the consumer side is horrible. Well, what about cars? Cars are horrible. They're depreciating assets that you pay monthly for instead of putting money in investments and building up real wealth. That's okay because you look cool and you can get chicks, I guess. I don't know what's the matter with people when it comes to having consumer debt. A lot of show. Right? All hat, no cowboy. Little guy syndrome, however you want to call it. It's sad. So don't get me wrong, but when it comes to a mortgage, man alive, no, I don't want you paying extra on your house instead of putting money away in a Roth IRA and having it compound tax-free. It's just simply wrong on any level. Now, here is why I want to point this out. It's really important. Think about that compound interest chart we've all seen, okay? Start at the left. Goes really low, barely rising, and then it kind of swoops up at the end, right? Okay, so let's just kind of go with a, you know, like the average of the market minus a couple of points, okay? So we're only going to get like 8% over the next X years. So we take and we say, you know, but before I do anything, I want to get that house paid off. And let's just say it takes us, you know, like 15, 16 years to pay that off. Okay, so we took all of our extra money. And we take our compound interest chart, we say, okay, so if we're not going to double the last two doubles, let's take one double. Let's just say even one. We missed one double of our retirement accounts, our investment accounts. So what happens? Do we, like, take the first double off, the first, like, 8 or 9 years off? Or is it the last where the chart goes, shoo, where that million becomes two, the two becomes four? Just take it away. So we paid off our house, and then you wipe out, was it $1 million? Is it $500,000? Do we wipe out $2 million because we got rid of the last double? Because we concentrated on something that's going to go away naturally. Look, I don't have a problem 10, 15 years from retirement. Everything else is nailed down. But the reality is if it means you can't put money away in your retirement accounts. You can't put money away in non-qualified accounts so you have balance in retirement. You can't put away money in a Roth IRA because you're paying extra on the mortgage. It's a poor decision. It's a poor decision. Time is of essence in the building of assets, a building of wealth. And the mountain has to be gigantic to produce income for life. Gigantic. You cannot have a loss of $1 million or $2 million on the last double because you're paying extra. on a house. There are only three things that matter to how much money you have. The amount of time to compound, the amount of money you put away, and the interest rate you earn. Everybody thinks it's how much you put away. Dead wrong. It's the least, by far, the least important of the three. It's what you earn, which is why it's important to invest. You know, at today's interest rates on a 10-year treasury, it takes, what, 35 years to double? 37 years to double your money? Average market, 7.2 years? Oh, it's not going to be average in the future. Fine, whatever. 8%? 7? Does it take 9 years, 10 years to double? Redouble and redouble and redouble? It matters what you make. And time. Because that last double is everything. It's everything. The last double is everything. It's the million becomes two. And many people lose the last two doubles. Where 500 doesn't become a million to become 2 million so you can afford to retire. It's that important. You have to start early. You've got to start now. 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 Not after you pay off your mortgage. Our number is 580-5436, 580-KIDO. We'll be right back for our final segment.
This is Money Matters with Dave Pezzo. Dave is taking calls right now. Call 580-5436, Idaho's place to talk. 580-KIDO, Idaho's place to talk.
Hello and welcome. Final segment of Money Matters. If you have any comments, questions during the week, hey, shoot those over to PetsoFinancial.com. P-E-T-S-O, financial, not the sauce, P-E-T-S-O. And also we've got archived radio programs there and podcast. You can also do that through the Apple Store as well. So, and also calculators and articles to help you with your own financial planning. But we'd love to have you comment and let us know what you'd like to be hearing us talk about on Saturdays. All right, let's go to the phones. Let's go to Marty. Marty, thanks for calling. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, Dave, I just wanted to say how spot on that was that you were saying that. I just happened to pick it up in the car as I was driving. And people just don't realize how important it is, one, like you said, to start early and stay with the game. And I've listened to you for years. And you've encouraged me, especially through the downturn of 2008, to stay with your game plan and hang in. And right now I'm at that crucial point that 56 years old of, you know, all the scary stuff you hear. And I want to retire by the time I'm 60, 62, right in that range, and not have to worry about Social Security. It'll be, you know, just be gravy. And I keep telling myself I need to come in and talk to you guys just so that you can keep my head on course.
Well, I appreciate that, Marty. So you've been listening for a number of years then, huh?
Yeah, and I started saving back in, I'm sure you remember A.L. Williams when they came out.
Oh, my gosh, yeah, yeah.
Way back then, and I went, I never, you know, I went, I got involved with it. I never made a penny, but I made, you know, over a million just because I listened to what they had to say, took it to heart, got invested, and started out at, you know, $50 a month.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, like you said, it grows. I don't think I figured out one time I had maybe $40,000, invested of my own actual money out of pocket.
Wow.
And that's grown, you know, 12, 14 times.
It's crazy. It's crazy. The compounding is amazing, isn't it?
It is. It is. And people don't believe you. And I try to tell the guys at work, I say, you've got to get involved now. Don't worry about the motorcycle and the snowmobile. Forget those and start saving a little each time, and the light at the end of the tunnel, you'll be able to see it then when you're in your 50s. Otherwise, it's still a black hole.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And when you do that, you just take a little bit right off the top. You never really miss it. And I also used to talk about starting out at $50. You know, people say, I don't want $50. What's that going to do? Well, 50 means you'll get to 60, and then you can start saving 75, and then the next raise you get, you could take it to $100, and then you're at 150, and then you're at 200, and then you're at $500, and you're saving real money. But if you don't start, you never start.
Yeah, and right now I'm at a point where, I could save more, but I've chosen to not save more so that I can enjoy more, because I don't know what the future holds. So I have it so I can enjoy more now with grandkids and stuff.
Right.
But everything I've got saved is growing so so well that I don't have to try to do the catch up.
That's right. You're letting the compounding is going to take you home now, not the money you put away.
Exactly.
Which allows for a better lifestyle right now, and you can bless your grandchildren and yourself in the process.
Yeah. Man, and that's, and that's why I've always been thankful when you've come on, and I've listened to you over the years, and just you've always been spot on. And I've always been scared when I hear some of these other gurus that come out there and start, talking about their special formulas for getting rich, and I just think, who are they going to sucker in today?
Exactly, and unfortunately they do, because people want a product answer, and it's not. It's a lifestyle answer. It's a whole process of life. It's not a product. Here's the winning product, and it guarantees you can't lose, but you get stock market returns. They don't have that thing. That's not real. It's not real.
So I just want to tell everybody out there that's listening, especially the young guys, get in there, get invested, get into some mutual funds and start early, and then just start learning. As you learn, knowledge is power, and you'll be so much more thankful in 50 years than what you ever thought was. Well, it's not in 50 years, it's 40 years.
Beautiful, Marty. All I can say is amen. Thank you for your call today.
Hey, well, thank you.
All right, everybody, have a great week. All right, thanks a lot. Have a good weekend. We'll talk to you all next week.
Money Matters is brought to you in part by Petzl Financial Consultants and Mountain West Bank, Idaho's community bank with offices in Boise, Ketchum, and Coeur d'Alene. Dave Petzl, the host of Money Matters, is a certified financial planner professional and an investment advisor representative with Cambridge Investment Research Advisors Incorporated. Registered representative securities offered through Cambridge Investment Research Incorporated, a broker-dealer member FINRA SIPC. Investment advisor representative Cambridge Investment Research Advisors Incorporated, a registered investment advisor. Cambridge Investment Research Incorporated and Petzl Financial Consultants are not affiliated companies. These are the opinions of Dave Petzl and are based on information from sources believed to be reliable but may change as information changes or becomes outdated. Nor should any opinion contained herein be construed or considered as a solution.